devil's minions, filthy animals that represent both literal and philosophical darkness, in opposition to the light of God. So it's a bit ironic that churches have so often become the nesting places of these creatures. I continue exploring the church, climbing up a flight of stairs and stepping through a little door into the attic. On the old wooden floorboards are piles of guano and severed butterfly wings, a clear sign that the church is inhabited by the brown, long-eared bat. The dusk, flickering between the roof slats, grows weaker, and outside, the sky turns navy blue. The humid night air entering the attic carries a pleasant smell of freshly cut grass, tar, and sun-warmed wood. The bats are unwilling to come out from under the eaves this early in the evening, so I go outside to meet them in the cemetery as they alight into the summer night. One after another, they take off head first from the roof and go straight to the nearest tree and its protective shadows. In a fitful dance, they glide by the red-painted wooden church, alongside the hedges and around the treetops, searching for insects, inaudible to the human ear. Soon, they'll be gone, swallowed by the night. Swedish churches and their outbuildings have largely been tended in the same way for centuries, and have grown to be important havens for animals and plants in an ever-changing world. Year after year, long-eared bats have moved into turrets and attics in the early summer to give birth to new generations. In the 1980s, 2/3 of churches in Västergötland had their own bat colony. Today, 40 years later, research I've done with my colleagues shows that this number has decreased by a third because of light pollution and other factors. Because the churches all glow like carnivals in the night. District after district has installed modern floodlights to showcase their architectural pride. All the while, the animals, which for centuries have found safety in the darkness of the church towers and for 70 million years have made the night their abode, are slowly, but surely, vanishing from these places, maybe completely. Sitting in the cemetery in the July night, I'm not only in the company of bats. I can see a hedgehog, beetles making their way up through the grass towards the starry sky, and, above the headstones, caddisflies dancing like spirits. I start to relax in the shady environment, as all the impressions of the day give way to more subtle experiences, and my eyes slowly acclimatize to the night. I've entered another dimension that few others ever take the time to visit. It is not just the bats and me who enjoy the darkness. Most mammals are more active at twilight, like the hedgehog that keeps me company at this late hour. Half of the insects on this planet are nocturnal. And for the last couple of years, we have been drowning in alarming reports regarding their disappearance. Forestry, environmental toxins, large-scale farming, and climate change, many causes are mentioned, but little is said about light. Even though the light-sensitive moth belongs to one of the most affected categories. Moths looking for nectar in the darkness are easily confused by all the lights. Either they don't fly at all, believing that dawn is about to break, or they're caught in the beams of light when trying to navigate by the moon. Exhausted, they die or get killed by predators without having fulfilled their nocturnal mission. And in that way, fewer plants are pollinated. Many of us have probably seen the phenomenon out in our gardens or under a streetlight. The brighter the lights, the greater the attraction. The light lures insects from forests and villages, from the countryside and cities, depleting entire ecosystems. Mosebo Church may lack floodlighting, but some light still reaches this place. Alongside the walking paths, there are a few lights, and in the sky, a faint orange glow can be seen coming from the nearest villages. This is light pollution, a collective term used for light that can be regarded as superfluous, but still has a great impact on our lives and on our ecosystems. The term was coined by astronomers, but is today used by ecologists, physiologists, and neurologists who study the effects of the disappearing night. It is no longer just a question of stars and insects. It is about all living things, including we humans.